Everyone, it's Dr. Denise. This is part two of Embrace Your Neurostyle with Kirkpatrick Miller and Kathleen O'Toole. It just dropped in the mid-sentence. I lost it, but guess what? Adaptive perfectionism says the show must go on. Kirkpatrick Miller and Kathleen, we were just talking about neurostyle, neurodiversity, and neurotypical. I have no idea where it dropped off, but I'm just going to go for the neurotypical statement that Kirk just said. So in defining neurostyle, that we all process and perceive things in our own unique way, Kirk was mentioning eloquently that the word neurotypical implies that maybe there's something wrong. And so I was just explaining, and I won't know where it dropped off, that I had an aha moment when I was reading the book Neurotribes, and that there's neurotypical and neurodiversity, which I champion and think it's fantastic. When you're getting scientific data, you need to have words that delineate. So words are powerful. So I'm all about taking it one next step, saying thank you, Western medicine, thank you, science, for having those terms. But what about neurostyle? And as I was talking, I was just mentioning that it's a bridge of Western, Eastern, and universal truths, that the word neurostyle encompasses biological, psychological, social, cultural, spiritual, and the sixth sense, intuition. So we're just having a short and sweet show, just really kind of regrouping as to why I started this series. We've all been using this word for so long, but how do you get words out into the kind of popular vernacular? You need to talk about them more. So guys, thank you for being here.
Oh, it's our pleasure. And you did a beautiful job coming back in. I know you had just said at the end, you said, you know, there's nothing wrong with saying, you know, I'm depressed or I am stressed out, and you know, utilizing medical terminology. And I just wanted to be very clear about the reason I like the word neurostyle so much better than neurotypical is because the second word, typical, means that if you're, you know, within the normal, you know, one standard deviation of the norm, you're going to fit within this framework. And I don't think that it's good. I don't even think it's healthy to box people in and say, you have to fit here. And what I like about neurostyle is that it allows everyone absolute freedom to be who they want to be. So, because everybody's going to have little quirks, strengths. We all have weaknesses that can become strengths if we know what they are and how to work on them. And then it also allows us to embrace ourselves. And so, you know, there's nothing wrong with, as you were stating, the medical terminology is very needed for codes, for medication, for charting. So those are important terms to have. But as someone who's, you know, a board certified patient, so to speak, I would have to say, you know, I like the word neurostyle. It's something for me, you know, I would much rather think of myself as, you know, I am impatient. I like to be, you know, perfect. I like things to work out the right way. I like things to fit into a mental plan rather than just define it as I'm OCD, because you know, OCD has this massive spectrum. So does ADHD. So does anxiety. So neurostyle allows us to actually define that spectrum a little better and individualize.
And I think, I don't know where we got cut off from the last show, but let's just say no matter where we are in the world, people use words like introvert versus extrovert, or I'm a hybrid, or if you're in the spiritual world, I'm an empath or I'm intuitive. So for me, and also when you're looking at whatever your own unique way you process the world, and then you've got your cultural overlays. So, and I also wanted to tell you, it came into my feed. She's like really well known. Her name is Susan Cain, and she did an amazing TED talk on the power of introverts. And sort of like myth busting that back in the day, people thought the extroverts always were the successful ones, and that there's so many things about the work environments and school environments that don't take into consideration different people's sensory styles or sensory perspectives. So can we just talk a little bit about that? Because that's the beauty. We honor neurostyle, that we honor ADHD, generalized anxiety, depression, bipolar, hybrids. Those are very important things to find out about your unique neurostyle. But then there's so much more to us. So we're saying it's all encompassing.
And what you had said, Dr. Denise, before on the previous show was that this is not an anti using those diagnoses or words or anything. That's not what neurostyle is about. But it's rather, it's about being able, as Kirk said, to kind of define oneself a little bit better. Because if you use one of those diagnoses and try to explain yourself to your colleague, they might have all these preconceived notions of what that diagnosis means that don't even apply to you. Because, you know, this is everybody has their own unique way. So you both could be autistic, but it could be very different labels, diagnoses for two different people. I did want to, Kirk had used the phrase embrace your neurostyle. And that's something that Dr. Denise has talked about in her neurostyle, you know, blogs and podcasts before. And I think that really goes along with Dr. Denise's mantra of awareness. Help me, Dr. Denise.
Oh yeah, the universal truth. So I like to, when I'm talking, the neurostyle word we talked in the last show is to also model to people the importance of our words carrying a vibrational frequency. And so neurostyle is hopeful and it's neutral. And it ties in with the universal truths. When I spoke in India at the Dalai Lama's Body Mind Life Conference, when I was looking at East and West and bridging, neurostyle is a bridge term, because in order to have the highest level of mental, physical, and spiritual well-being, we need to have awareness, self-love, and altruism. And the awareness comes when we stay neutral and open and in a place of self-love and self-acceptance. So to me, neurostyle is shame busting, empowering. It's like you're throwing down a lightning bolt and saying, I'm shy. Here I am. I'm talkative. Here I am. I have ADHD, bipolar, and OCD, and I fucking rock. So I feel like that's the empowering part. It's right. Really about an awareness and a self-love.
Right. And embracing one's own neurostyle, right? So that's the awareness. Like, okay, let me figure out what my neurostyle is. And some of us might be adults still figuring this out. Some figure it out when they're a teenager or even a child. But it's work that needs to be done, because then we can climb up the chain of self-love and then on into altruism. And if we can figure out our own neurostyle, then that, okay, I got it. Awareness, then that helps us figure out the neurostyles of those around us who we are trying to care, support, and lift up.
Yes, I love what you're saying. Can we each do some examples? Because I think now that we've talked about this, can we do what I call tangible linear examples of how this can come into play? If either of you want to give an example, we've done a couple in the first show, but this is part two because it just dropped. I have examples. Does anyone want to go first and have the talking stick?
Honestly, I why don't you jump into, there's okay. So much to unpack with what was just said.
So let me give you an example. I'm a mom, and you go to first new experiences when you're getting to know your child. And I'll remember when my son was 3 years old, going to the fireworks in El Segundo here in California. And that's supposed to be this happy, joyful time where everyone's getting their good old American food and, you know, just really be unified. And there's supposed to be this excitement around fireworks. Well, once the fireworks went off, this is the first time my son had ever been exposed to fireworks. You would have thought he was shot in a gang crossfire. The amount of terror in his body, I was holding him, and how he started crying and screaming. It was pure torture for his neurostyle. I had to go and take him and find a brick building to shield him from the sound. put my hands over his ears. He was shaking. And so I found out, and there's so many other sensory things for his unique, beautiful neurostyle. He's now 13 and he's come a long way, baby, with sensory experiences. But I found out that the sound and the noise, there's different textures, different clothing, different. So then I learned not just, you know, the humility, you know, being a mother and being a parent just really humbles you. I'd heard these things as a doctor, but when you go through whatever your life experiences of your unique sensory style, you start to have more compassion for others. And so I want you guys to chime in because there's so much we can do. Like, we're going to do more shows, books, series. But to me, even now, my son, yesterday, he's come a long way. You know, he can go to fireworks. But yesterday, he was asked to go over to a friend's house and he was on FaceTime and he's very outgoing. He goes, no, my style doesn't like to go to a lot of different people's houses that I don't know.
Did he say my style?
Yeah, he said something like, oh, I don't really like going to people's houses as much. But then he and I used it as a conversation follow-up when he hung up. I go, Kieran, if you knew them a little bit more, can we get you ready to do that? He's like, maybe I want to go to this person's house, but not. But he feels empowered that he can say no. And then, of course, people are listening like, does she ever let him go out? Does he ever get to go? Yes. We have to adapt to our unique own sensory experience. And that's why I think we were talking at the part where I got cut off in the first show, that if you were to listen to just one sentence of anything we do, whether it's a news tagline, a tweet, social media, or part of the show, it could be misunderstood if we don't unpack it. So my son's neurostyle, without giving any diagnostic labels, he has sensory challenges. He's highly charismatic. He's got an entrepreneur mind. He's quick-witted. Writing is not his favorite. I'm not even going to go, but he's just amazing. He's like those stories where you hear people had some struggles in school or they had sensory challenges that end up blossoming because they were in an empowered environment that gave flexibility and hope. Instead of going, oh no, I've got the kid that can't do fireworks, or oh no, I have the kid that's not, the regular school isn't
can
right.
Can I jump in?
Please, please. But let me just finish up the last thing. I think the neurostyle term for all of us, for my own son, has been healing for me. I just want to say, everyone, that I think not only did I come up with this for all of us, but I did with humility as a mother, so that my son felt empowered. So I just think it's a really important part of, I think I was incredibly inspired by being a mother to come up with this term.
So what I want to just kind of give is the flip side viewpoint. My daughter, I was taking her to a Hollywood Studios. It's at Disney World here in Florida. And there was some ride, don't ask me the name of it. It was like some sort of movie ride, the great movie ride. And it was in the mock of the Chinese Man Theater. And we went up there and she goes, I don't want to go in. I said, well, you don't even know what this is. I frankly didn't know what it was. And she's like, it looks scary. I don't want to go in. And I said, all right, well, we won't go in. And the young man working the door said, wow. I said, wow, what? He goes, you would be amazed at the amount of parents who bring their children kicking and crying and screaming inside on this ride because they want to go on it. Mm. And I'm like, well, that's not really honoring their neurostyle, is it? No. Mm-hmm. So I think what's important about this word is that we can start to not only embrace our own neurostyle, but honor the neurostyle of those around us. And it might not be in a parental role. It might be in the office, the anywhere, right? Where I worked with a gentleman who was like, he had multiple sensitivities to chemicals, and he was like, please do not wear perfume, you know. And that's not quite a neurostyle, but
yes, no. But that's like a wait beyond. Yes, it is, because neurostyle is we all process and perceive things in our own unique way. It's a sensory experience. And I want to, because I know Kirk has a lot to say, but right when you just said this, I want to use the word empathy. When we have terms that allow us to have a deeper understanding for one another, words that are shame busting and hopeful, that's when we unlock a huge level of vulnerability and get closer to one another. So the other thing I like about this, like with my dear friend Beverly, who's going to be on the series in May or June, Beverly is a high-level empath. And I'm bringing this up because I know Kirk's going to be able to say something about this. And with the pulse of consciousness of all the trauma we just have as a humanity with coming out of the pandemic and now with the war going on in Ukraine, when I give Beverly stories, my dear friend, she has such a high level of sensitivity of feeling the feelings. I do too. I'm an empath, but hers is to the point where I have to, when I send her a link to a show, I'll say, this might be an empath overload show for you, because at one point someone reveals something so sad, because she listened to one show with Donna Anderson of The Rock and Betrayal. And after she listened to the first one, she felt everyone's trauma of fraud at once. And it put her into an empath overload. So I think words like neurostyle, I'm an empath, oh, my ADD is feeling this way today, or I've had like a tough week. I even told my friend I may or may not be able to go out tonight. I'm going to be able to, because I said I had too many patient emergencies this week. Just like yesterday, I told you I needed a day of respite. So now, Kirk, do you think these were good examples of terms and the ways we can unpack ideas and thoughts and feeling states?
There's a lot that I've been kind of just going over mentally as you were both speaking. And, you know, first I want to say, when you described your son without going into any diagnostics, what you did, all of those descriptions were, number one, positive. They were also something that, you know, if I were listening to them, there would be no shame whatsoever. That right there is where the power of the word neurostyle comes in, because you can literally define anything that's in the DSM with ease, without using a single word that like would be specifically defined for this medical term, right? So if you say bipolar instead of saying manic or hypomanic or whatever the case might be, you can describe everything about that individual without getting bogged down with some of the more heated words that come with, you know, misunderstandings, stigmas. And so I just wanted to say that. So for everybody listening, if you just hop back to the beginning of this and listen to how she described her son, that is the power of the word neurostyle. So I love that.
Can I say something too?
Yes.
I want to say the idea of know your audience. So you're going to give a level of qualitative understanding of yourself based on what audience you're in, who you are, and what. So you might choose to go deeper dive in your neurostyle, saying, oh, I have ADHD or generalized anxiety. And we're living in a time where those things are way more socially acceptable than when I came up with the term neurostyle. So we're living at people are sort of out of the closet with mental health now. But I think it also gives people permission to know what they want to share. Know your audience, everyone. You have the power to share what you do or don't want to do with anyone at any given time. That builds trust and greater intimacy.
Oh, I absolutely agree. And, you know, if I were speaking to, say, you know, a doctor that I'm working with specifically, like, I can give an example where I was working for a pilot study. So I was the study coordinator, and we were having people that were recalcitrant on medications and, you know, struggling. And I had to speak on a medical level in terms of using the right terminology, the time frames, everything had to match up. When I speak to, you know, students that are struggled, and I may even know what their diagnosis is because the parents often share them with me. When they're younger, when they're smaller, and those words don't really have much meaning to them yet, or maybe even they have a negative connotation, it's amazing to be able to say, you know, oh, it's okay. You're just getting a little distracted. That's okay. It's okay to be distracted. Let's figure out how we can focus in. And, you know, it allows them to kind of light up. And instead of being fearful or upset at, you know, something they're struggling with. And this is something I see so often, you know, when I'm working with a young child and, or an adult, or it doesn't even matter the age, when they come across something that they are struggling with and they don't like themselves because of it. I love being able to use the word neurostyle. Listen, your neurostyle is that, you know, you care about how you perform. You care about doing a great job. That's a different way of saying you're anxious. You're dealing with, you know, stage fright, or you're dealing with, you know, fear of speaking in front of others. That those words themselves have a lot of power. So when somebody says fear, you know, automatically they go, oh, or, you know, stage fright. If you think of the word right there, it just automatically sets people up to feel like they're going to fail. So instead saying, listen, you care so much about being perfect. You care so much about being great and doing your best. Those are things to be proud of. And then I can kind of wrap that in that's your neurostyle. There's nothing wrong with wanting to be the best that you can be. And then you notice the fear that they're feeling for those moments kind of starting to fade away. So I feel it's a very powerful tool to kind of reframe the way people are looking at themselves. And
when you just said that exact comment that you just said, the way that people are looking at themselves. So the term embrace your neurostyle and beyond is, we're talking about sensory perception. And a lot of people who might have been diagnosed, and rightfully diagnosed in the Western vernacular, with generalized anxiety, low-grade depression, hypomania, bipolar, I can tell you from a scientific method standpoint of 40,000 hours plus of patients, that I find the most amazing things of sensory perception and creativity with people who may or may not fall into absolute diagnoses in the Western world. And so my reason for Embrace Your Neurostyle and Beyond, we're going to start this year, I'm going to start having people like my colleagues that do remote viewing, people access, like my son, let me make this real tangible. And Kirk, because you're such a creative person, maybe you can talk about creativity and sensory perception. My son, when he knew that I had to leave a family vacation in 2018, he didn't just know I had to get back on a flight to go to a legal case. He was having a sensory perception of knowing me so well because I'm his mother. And there's this intuition when we love people, we connect on a deeper unseen energy level. So if you're an empath, or if you have connection, or we all have levels of intuition and empathy and compassion, part of your neurostyle is how much you're able to access that level of unseen energy. So if someone's a high level empath, they can also maybe, it doesn't mean they're absolutely going to be diagnosed with generalized anxiety or low-grade depression, but their pulse of sensory awareness and their spidey senses are all encompassing. So for me, the word neurostyle and beyond allows that sixth sense of intuition and unseen energy and unpack all of it so that we're more holistic in the way we have our own self-love and self-awareness.
I love that. And I want to just piggyback right off of what you just said. When Kathleen was talking about her experience, not forcing her, you know, child to go onto a ride because, you know, she understood her. It's the same thing. She felt empathy. She understood that that wasn't the right thing to push. And for me, when I meet individuals that know me to the point where they can almost know me better than I know myself. Sometimes I think we all have blind spots where we can't see where we're at. We're having a rough day. And it's amazing when you see somebody else that says, listen, you know what? Why don't you go, you know, put on a comfortable pair of pants? You look uncomfortable. You just, you know, you feel this way. And a lot, oftentimes that's literally all I need, is somebody to get me. Or if I'm having a really stressful day, they call up and say, listen, everything's going to be fine. So I love when what you just said, where, you know, people really know you. And once they dive in and they understand your neurostyle, they can actually help you ground yourself. And, you know, there was, when you were talking about kind of the And I'm sorry, I'm going off on a bunch of different tangents. There was one thing I really wanted to say that was kind of important. You mentioned, like, you know, self-awareness is being so important. And Kathleen was talking about when you find yourself, where some people find it really early and some people find it, you know, later on. I did want to say, like, for me, I had found myself when I was young. When I got an official diagnosis, I lost who I was again. So for me, I was absolutely fine. I knew exactly who I was, who I wanted to be, what I was capable of. And when I got like these four major diagnoses, I remember literally just suddenly not knowing who I was. And that has lasted for, you know, around 20 years, even though I started kind of finding my way back. It's literally within the last 3-4 years where I've really started to feel a little bit more empowered, and even in the last month where things are really ramping up. So I do want to say that it's okay to kind of lose who you are. You can always find yourself again. And that's one of the things.
Kirk, mm-hmm. I want to ask a precise question. Why do you think you lost yourself?
I think that what happened was, you know, I had this vision of where I was going, what I was going to do. And when those diagnoses dropped and all of a sudden I'm on medications and I have to do blood tests every 2 weeks because the medications are tough on your body and they have to make sure that everything, it just, my whole life became about, well, let's use your term, Dr. Denise. It became about illness, not wellness. And when that happened, my entire path just became like foggy, that I had no idea where I was going anymore. So yes.
I know you really well, but in this exact moment of you sharing this, my neurostyle is feeling like incredibly deep, deep compassion and empathy for that moment that you were on your amazing superstar path. And so just because you were having feeling states of mania or ADD or anxiety does not mean that greatness. So it's really reminding me, I'm feeling the sense that you were almost like paralyzed with shame, that there was something Absolutely. So wrong with you. And it's making me even more realize how important these discussions are. Like because I see people all the time because this is what I do as a doctor. And I'm like, wait a second. Like, just because you have bipolar or ADD, it's not the kid. Like, we can work with this. We can work with your energy states. Absolutely. So I just want to say I'm having deep compassion for you being on this trajectory. And for some people, when they get the labels, they're helpful. But this is another point. For other people, it could feel like, oh, my life is over now that I have these labels.
And that's kind of that. And that's definitely how it felt. And I mean, I wasn't even aware of how I felt. It literally blindsided me. So it felt like I was just suddenly in a totally different life. So somebody had just literally lifted me out and put me in a different body. And, you know, it was very, very difficult, to deal with that because of course that added to the depressions I felt, and the feeling how I felt lost. And I always had sensory issues. So everything just like went through the roof, and I wasn't even aware that was happening. It's been through looking backwards and reflecting on my experiences that's even allowed me to understand that I did get lost. And when you do find yourself again, and part of the reason I did and I was able to was because of our talk so many years ago when you first brought up this word, and I started looking at myself going, wait a second. Listen, I've been stable for years. Why am I still calling myself this? Like I have this, or this is who I am. I'm not defined by the issues that I have overcome. In fact, those things were just stepping stones. So the neurostyle for me was always, you know, that was a catalyst to change. It was a catalyst for me to find who I was, for self-awareness, and then also to start shedding those layers of shame that I felt. And the word shame absolutely encapsulates how I felt when you're told, listen, you're never going to be able to do this. You're never going to do this. You're never going to do this. And it just kept coming from one psychiatrist to another, to another, to another. And they never meant it in a negative way, but there wasn't another way for people to talk.
So it wasn't the bridge discussion of the empowerment and the neutrality that everything's energy. And there might be a day if someone's having depression, that's their rest day. And then if they have a little hypomania, they might knock it out of the park the next day. So even if you're seeing the right doctor, the right exercise, nutrition, prayer, sleep, all of it, this acceptance of your own neurostyle, that you can have your knock it out of the park days, and that your thrive is different than someone else's thrive. And that's the kind of educational piece. And you guys are actually like reminding me how important, like, I feel really humbled by this conversation because I'm just in it right now as though it's the first time I've heard this. I try to do that too, where I'm like, oh my God, I get to talk with Kathleen and Kirk, even though I know you guys. But it's so important that people have this awareness of what we tell ourselves and how we synthesize any sort of information can have a more peaceful day or lack of peace. Because I think, Kathleen, when we did our interview back on this, you're like, oh my God, Dr. Denise is talking radical happiness. And now I'm like, wait a second, everyone. Let's just talk peaceful moments. Peaceful moments.
Infinite radical happiness I was supposed to have.
Like, and Kathleen, I felt like when I just like,
that's too much pressure, gang. Oh my sorry. God.
You know what I pictured now that we're saying this? If I were just able to do a funny meme and clap my hands and go, meme, everyone. It would be Kathleen sitting on next to a tree with an apple over her head. And me with a bow and arrow going, radical happiness, and then shooting bows at her. Like, Denise, calm down, honey. Let's just get a peaceful day. We don't have to have infinite radical happiness. But see, even... And so it's fun, like, to be playful with words and know, like, Kathleen's neurostyle and my neurostyle and Kirk's and all of your neurostyle. Because then it becomes fun. And, like, can you imagine a world where we were all the same? I mean, to me, that would be so boring.
Oh, absolutely. And it's not going to happen. You know, it's one of those things where I like and that's actually something I do really love about the term too, because it allows people to feel part of a community because everyone can use that word.
Correct.
It's not like you have to be. Exactly.
Correct. So instead of that. This goes back to when I had that aha moment of neurodiversity versus neurotypical. Neurostyle is the bridge term that allows all of us to feel loved and understood and have tolerance, acceptance, and help us on a shame busting way. And I don't know, as we're closing out, if there's anything either of you want to say, because I'm just so grateful to both of you that I have your perspectives and that we have these discussions. It's really humbling. And I feel like I'm always learning from both of you.
I do have to jump in and I have to tell both you and Kathleen that I deeply appreciate how you both parent. And for anyone listening as a parent,
out not there, every day, Kirk.
I know. Well, you know what? There's going to be rough days no matter what. But one of the things that, you know, is sometimes missed is, you know, in those rough days, those, you know, good and bad, the thing that got me through life was knowing I was loved. It was literally that simple. Mm. The fact that I knew that I was loved and, you know, my failures were not seen as, you know, a massive end of the world experience, but they were, you know, someone was always there to help and hug, and not everyone has that. But when you have a parent there that is loving and they show compassion, and even through their frustrated moments, you know, when you both talk about how you parent, it's the reason I feel I am the person I am, and success is something, and being able to thrive is possible because of the family that I had. So
shout out to Jean, right? Your mom. Absolutely. What's your dad's name?
Jack. So Jean Jack, and then go my sister too. They were all amazing. But both of you, I really think that needs to be said, because that story about the ride, Kathleen, that's just beautiful. And that will allow so much more freedom and, you know, an ability to express, and you know, it's just beautifully done. So I really wanted to state that and make sure that was out there.
All right, everyone. Thank you for listening to our discussion. There's going to be a lot more coming your way and our ways. And Kathleen and Kirk, thank you. Thank you, everyone. Embrace your neurostyle.
Thank you.